InDigital is on a mission to improve the 911 industry. Our goal is to create something better, to go above and beyond the current standards. Our passion for creating the most advanced, well-designed solutions led to our position as an industry leader in next-gen core services. For the millions of calls processed over our emergency IP networks, to our text for 911 solution, Texty, to our disaster recovery and backup solution, Mevo, it's easy to see we love what we do. For more information, check us out at www.indigital.net.
Rapid Deploy believes that every public safety agency, regardless of size, should have access to the data they need when it matters most. That's why, since 2016, our mission has been to reduce emergency response times and improve public safety. We are the industry's only integrated emergency response platform. Our web-based cloud platform includes analytics, mapping, dispatch, and mobile apps, purpose-built for 911 in the 21st century. Visit www.rapiddeploy.com to learn how we enable effective, efficient, data-driven emergency response.
If Within the Trenches has ever taught you something, open your eyes to what it is like to be a 911 dispatcher, or has inspired you to become one, then help support us and join our Patreon. Get exclusive bonus content, one-of-a-kind swag, discounts on merchandise, ad-free early access to new episodes, and much more. To join, please visit patreon.com/WTTpodcast. And if you're an industry partner, we have something for you as well. And now, for the show.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning, this episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Going on, this is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. This episode is sponsored by InDigital as well as Rapid Deploy, and thank you all for being here. We are December 21st right now. This episode will probably go out later this week, which will be good. Be right before the new year, and that's right, the new year. 2021 is coming up. 2020 has gone actually pretty fast. Like I think about the last in-person conference that I was at, and it feels like it was only a couple months ago, but we're going on a year ago that I was at one of those. And man, just weird to think this year that's been a crap year. But I think there's a lot of good that has come out of it, at least for me personally and others that I know. There's been a lot of good that has come out of it. It has kind of forced all of us to think of, you know, different ways, think outside of the box, to continue what it is that we do, as well as to continue to connect and be there to support each other and such. So even though there's been some crap stuff that's happened, it's been a good year. I think it's been a very good year. Thank you to all the patrons for everything this year, for, you know, following, supporting, all of it. I appreciate it more than you know. If you want to check any of the behind the scenes and extra bonus stuff that comes with being a patron, check out patreon.com/WTT podcast. And again, I wouldn't be able to do what I do if it wasn't for all the patrons, the sponsors, and all of you who watch, listen, share, and support. So thank you very, very much. I'm excited to have my guest on today. We were co-workers for a little bit of time. And I think it was maybe only a few months or so. But it's been good. She's been doing a lot of good stuff out in Alabama. My guest today is Holly, and she is the Alabama Service Manager for InDigital. Hey.
Hey there. How are you?
I am doing very well. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Excellent. So I have to ask right away, because I'm looking outside for me, and I know the type of weather that you all get down there, and it's so nice. But how's your weather over there?
Actually, right now, we're a little warmer than normal. Well, I say that. I think today's high is like 62, you know, which to me is very cold. To some others, it's still short weather. So we've had a little bit of cold snap, but nothing like you guys get up there. I promise you that. I've got my beach scene on the back to remind me that brighter days are coming. So, you know, we'll eventually see that again.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny that you say that about, you know, 62 and such, where some, you know, it's shorts weather and others it's not. I was in Florida this past week, and I was there for, you know, contract work that I do with the Denise Amber Lee Foundation. But a couple of those days, I was there with my mom and my younger sisters, right, and my soon-to-be brother-in-law. And so I'm the second to the last day that I'm there, I went to go pick up my sister at work, and she had to get a few things. I needed to stop at Walmart. We're walking in, and I remember looking at my watch, and I believe the weather was, it was like 64 or so. Uh-huh. And she's got this like big, long, like button-up sweater. And there are other people that are walking with, you know, kind of like a Carhartt jacket, others with like parkas.
Oh, and wow.
And she's looking at me and she goes, you know, you really don't fit in here. Like, you can tell you're not from around here. And I said, because I'm in a t-shirt and shorts and everyone is wearing like parkas. And she goes, yeah, it's kind of cold. And I said, I don't know. This is beautiful weather in the Midwest.
Yeah. We were, that's funny, because we were actually camping the first weekend of December. We do a family camping trip down at Gulf State Park, which is here in Orange Beach. And some of the people that were, and it was cold to us. So we're sitting out by our campfire and we've all got on toboggans and gloves, you know, this kind of thing. And some of the other campers are walking by and they would actually stop and they say, you're from the South. You know, you're not a snowbird, because the people that are here that are from the North, they're walking around in their shorts and their t-shirts, and we're going, y'all are crazy. It's too cold for that. So yeah, it's real. It's real.
Yeah, definitely. My mom was telling me, she goes, you know, you're going to have to make sure that you pack warm. And I said, really? And she goes, yeah. She goes, it's really cold over here. And it's something that you haven't experienced being over here in Florida. I was like, okay. So I brought one pair of shorts just in case.
Right.
And I wore them. She goes, you're crazy. And I said, I'm just from up north.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So you've got about 25 years of experience, right, in the center?
Right. 25 in the center. I started in 94 as a dispatcher at 18 years old, and worked my way up. Left out as the director 25 years later, and wasn't really sure that's the route I wanted to go, because I originally wanted to be an accountant. So I went and took accounting classes and went to work for an accountant. And I realized about 3 years in, that was not for me, 2 years in actually. And so then I went to work for dispatch and found my heart. That's where I need to be, and stayed there my whole entirety. So.
Well, how did you get into it to begin with? I mean, at 18. So when I started, I was 19. I just kind of fell into it. You know, my mom, I was actually staying with her in Florida for a little while. And after about a month of hanging out there, she's like, you might want to go look for a job, because I don't think you're going back to Michigan. And I said, oh, yeah, maybe. So I'm looking for, you know, different work. I only had retail management experience at the time. And my cousin's husband was friends with the chief. The chief just happened to mention that they were hiring dispatchers. And I didn't know anything about 911, but I thought, you know, what the heck, I'll go try it. And I did. And I ended up getting the job. So was yours kind of similar, or do you come from a public safety background?
I do not come from a public safety background at all. But so down here, and I'm sure it's across the nation, where they have like a business occupational education program where you go to school and then you get out of school early and you go to work. And so my junior year in high school, I started at the police department in the records division. And I worked there my junior and senior year. So I would go to school until 1 o'clock, and then I'd have to be at work at 1:30 and just work till 5. Well, once I graduated, that program was, you know, no longer available to me. So that's whenever I started and, you know, went to the accounting firm and thought that's the route I wanted. Well, at the accounting firm in 1994, actually 1992, I was making $5 an hour. So in 1992, I was living at home. It wasn't a big deal, but I knew that if I wanted to do anything different or you know, move out of my grandparents' home, whatever, I had to find something. And so I saw it listed. Well, sometimes it helps with the people you know, because I called them up and this was, you know, the same supervisors I had when I worked in records and stuff. And so I jumped from $5 an hour to $9.45 an hour. And I was like, I'm in, you know, hire me. And so that's how it started. And then whenever I went there and I realized I was making more money than some of my friends that had 4-year degrees and found that that was a passion, you know, that I did have. I love people and I love to help. And it hasn't always been roses by any means, but that was just the decision I made and stuck it out, stayed there. So.
Excellent. Now, what was the training like for you then?
The training?
Mm-hmm.
Holy Jesus. So we were, you know, I guess in Dothan, we were a little ahead of the game than a lot of our region, because our 911 center, it's, you know, it's, we did it all. We didn't just call take, you know, back then, I don't even think it was separated where you had call takers and dispatchers. I mean, you know, we handled, you know, animal control, dispatch for fire, police, and EMS. We took the 911 calls. We took the admin calls. And to step a little further, the city of Dothan even owns their own power company. So we actually took after hour utility calls, or, you know, if there was a power outage or something like that. And then because we're in South Alabama, we're just so nice and just sweet people. If you decided not to pay your bill and you got cut off, you could call us, Ricardo, and we would call a electric guy out to come turn on your power in the middle of the night. I mean, so we did it all.
Wow.
But as far as training, so we had a CTO program. It wasn't anything like they are today, but we did daily DORs and that kind of thing. And, you know, we used to tease about being plugged in at the umbilical cord because you didn't do anything without that trainer there. And,
right.
You know, a lot of time that trainer become your mama and she would slap you in a quick minute if you said something wrong or unplugged you and shoved you out of the way, you know, and took over. But, you know, it was stressful because it was a lot to learn. Once you learned it, then you thought you were an idiot and a robot because you would be going through a McDonald's drive-thru and you'd say 10-3 that order. And they would like, ma'am, and I'm like, I'm sorry, just never mind that. I want this instead, you know? So, you know, luckily I caught on pretty quick because of my 2 years experience in records. So I wasn't in training, but about 5 months. And even now, some people think 5 months is long. You know, we've got some PSAPs in Alabama that you sign on the dotted line, you're hired and you're put on the radio immediately. They don't have a training program, you know, due to funds or staffing or, you know, there's a multitude of reasons. But whenever I was training and where I come from with the city of Dothan, we had a 12 to 18 month training program that you had to go through. So for me to be checked off in 5 months, I mean, I was like top of my game. I knew what was going on, you know, so it was good. But I mean, stress, man, there is no word to describe the stress of learning how to be a dispatcher. None.
Yeah, it's so when I first started, I remember my trainer, I went in for a midnight shift and I remember my trainer taking a 911 call and then it was my turn. He told me it was my turn next. And I remember thinking that he was joking, and which he wasn't. and I'll never forget him looking at me and just saying, you know, the only way you're going to learn how to do all this is by actually doing it. You know, you got to get in there and do it. And I remember saying, you know, there's no other training. There's nothing else. And he goes, it's, you know, common sense. And the way I put it now is, you know, being human, you know, just you're there to help that person. Now I did have a 40-hour, beginners like dispatchers training course that I did afterwards. So that did help, but
afterwards, you just said the key word after that call.
afterwards, and luckily that first call that I took, it wasn't really anything. You know, I believe it was a hang-up call or something. You know, wow. with that small police department, when the calls would come in for, let's say, medicals, we had what was called county radio, or which would have been, you know, central dispatch. Mm-hmm. There, that would have been. I worked in Polk County, but I was working for the city of Frostproof, a small little town. Whenever a call would come in that was a medical, we would just get, you know, the main information, transfer them over to county radio, and then we would page out our fire rescue to go out there and, you know, and do what they had to do. So there wasn't a lot of real, I guess I would say, high priority medicals. Mm-hmm. That I was taking. There was no CPR or nothing like that, but there was still a lot, and it was that type of stress is, like you said, it's hard to describe. You can't train for it. It's just something that happens. You kind of get used to it as you do it more and more.
Yeah. I tell you, talking about the first call and yours being a hang up, my very first EMD call that I had, I didn't know it was EMD. It was a 911 call. And so mm-hmm. the very first one that I handled by myself, she was still plugged in with me, you know, but I was handling it. There was nothing on the line. It was like a silent call. But whenever you are a dispatcher, you have that gut feeling something just isn't right. And so we couldn't hear anything. It was a dead call, you know, there was silence on or whatever. So we kept, you know, trying to get them to talk to us, couldn't get anything. And then in the faint background, you could hear like a little muffling sound, but you couldn't really tell, you know, what it was. And so, you know, we had Annie at the time. We had phase one. We didn't have phase two at the time. But anyway, so we were able to find this resident and send him over there. Come to find out, the caller had been chewing on a plastic straw, like a McDonald's straw or something. And part of it, you know how people chew on straws, had broken off and lodged in her windpipe. So she was not able to say anything or anything. So thankfully, with us being dispatchers, and you just know that there's just not something right about this call, we responded and she was able to live. But had it been just a silent call that we just hung up on, that some people are so lackadaisical and they just, you know, oh, that's just another hang up. Well, it may not be. You know, thankfully for technology and things, you know, it doesn't take as long of a process to find her like we had then. You never know. You never know.
Yeah. And that is very, very true that when you're taking these calls, you know, now your senses are heightened. You know, you're not only listening to the caller and everything that's going on in their room or their environment, wherever they are, but here on your other ear, you're also listening to the entire room that you're in, and you're combining all of that together. It's hard to describe, but yeah, you know, you are listening and you're trying to picture what's going on in the caller's environment. So as an example, like with what you were saying, which was excellent that you guys still, you know, that you stayed in the line, you heard, and you just had that gut feeling like, man, something's not right. Something's not right with this. There was a time that I was training someone and I was listening on the call with them. And I believe I'm pretty sure it was a domestic that was going on, and you could hear them hang up. And mm-hmm. when the caller hung up, I heard a pulse, like just like a 3 pulse sound, and the person, the trainee, went to hang up, and I was like, don't hang up yet. And she goes, what? And I said, did you hear that? And she goes, what did I hear? What? And I said, there was a pulse sound. I said, don't hang up. The person is going to pick up the phone again because they think that they didn't get through on the line. And sure enough, the person did. And afterwards, she's like, how did you know that? And I said, because I'm old. I said, because we used to have a rotary phone, and you could hear the pulse. And when you would hang up, or if someone else hung up and you kept the line open, you could hear that pulse of when they hung up. And you could stay there. Like we would, this is going to sound bad, but I've said it before. I used to prank my friends and they used to do the same thing to me where we would be talking on the phone and then hang up and would stay on the line. And yeah. Then whoever got on the phone next, whether it be my friend or one of their family members, they'd pick up the phone to go and dial. And then we'd go, or do something to scare them. And it was like, what are you doing? Get off the phone. We're like, all right. And then, you know, and then click. So yeah. that's one of those things, you know, you listen for that environment. And sometimes, you know, gut feeling or just sounds in the background, they help. So like with those pulses, man, that yeah. I'll never forget.
Yeah, for sure.
So along with your, you know, with your training and everything, now you said that, so you had done this program and then you end up going off and you're doing schooling and such for accounting and you're doing all of this, but then you realize it really wasn't the thing that you wanted to do. But then when you got back into dispatching, you realized that's what you wanted to do. That was your thing. Was there a specific call that happened or, you know, a training experience? What was it that really solidified the fact that this is the job that I want to do?
There's so many calls that really stand out to me, but I guess one of the biggest ones was, this was in 96. So I started in 94. So 2 years in, I took a 911 ended up being an EMD call with a CPR in progress. The CPR was on like a 10 or 11 month old baby. Excuse me. I mean, very, very young. Mm-hmm. And so I was talking with the dad and the mother was doing CPR. And then they ended up changing roles because I couldn't understand one. And I don't really remember which way it was, but anyway, we did CPR over the phone, and you know, as a dispatcher, you never know the end results. Mm-hmm. You never know. I mean, unless the fire department is generous enough to call you and say, hey, this is the outcome, or we page them and say, hey, let me know how that is or how it turns out, whatever, you never know the outcome. Well, about 2 months later, I guess, that baby was probably 9 or 10 months old, I guess, a couple months later, I got a phone call from my supervisor and said, Holly, I need you to be at Westgate Fire Station, which was our fire station number 3, at such and such time. And I need you to be dressed up because the media is there and they want to do a live interview with the fire department. And I'm sending you kind of as the representative for our center. I didn't really understand that. I knew that my supervisor at the time and I had a pretty tight bond. She was like a role model, but she was our comm center manager. And so anyway, she sent me over to the fire station. So I didn't know what to expect. So I went over there and, you know, in a business suit and, you know, met with them and everything. Well, come to find out, Ricardo, they had a surprise birthday party for the little girl who was turning 1 year old, and the mom and them had scheduled it to have it at the fire station. So really the surprise was for me, and they invited me to her birthday party because had it not been for me for those few first seconds of stepping up on my game and knowing what to do and directing them through CPR on the phone, you know, saved that baby's life. So I was able to be there. I mean, they took her, the little girl and me, on a ride on the fire truck. I mean, it was a big, you know how people do 1 year old birthday parties. They spend, you know, $2,000 on a birthday party. Right. But anyway, so they went, you know, and it was just a blessing in disguise that my heart, I mean, okay, you know, I am where I'm supposed to be. This was like the confirmation, you know, and just to know that if I don't ever save anybody else's life, I saved that little girl and that family's happy and all is well. So that was probably the first of many that I knew I was where I was supposed to be.
Oh, geez. Just listening to you, I can't show it on camera, but just listening to you talk, you got goosebumps. That's right. That is an amazing story. So you get there and you see, you realize what's going on. I mean, what is that like for you? Like, you're just like, oh man, what's going on? Like, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, actually I didn't. They had moved. So where this fire station is was their training facility at the time. So they had cleaned out one side of the bay and put one of their pumper trucks outside in the back. So the bay doors were closed and everything. I just went through the front door just like, you know, I was a citizen and did not know until, and then whenever I lost it, you know, here I was, you know, camera ready, so to speak, because I knew the media was going to be there. Well, then I go in there and I've got these huge alligator tears and my heart's just broken, you know, because I wasn't a parent at the time, but I could only imagine, you know, what they were experiencing. And I knew, you know, how connected I got to the call after the fact that I realized what was going on, you know, but just you talking, I mean, I was very honored that they remembered me. They didn't just remember the fire department that came to the rescue and the ambulance company that loaded them up, because they had the same shift that worked both, you know, they were all there. The mayor was there. I mean, you know, so it was a big to do, but they remembered that call taker that was on the phone that showed that compassion through that phone and showed that, you know, that smile through that phone to give them that reassurance that we're going to make it through this. We're going to make it through, you know, and it's making me tear up now thinking about it, because now I am a mother and I can relate. I can imagine, you know, so.
How long ago was that?
That was in 96.
96.
Yep. Yep.
Have you heard anything else from the family or anything like that?
I have not. And, you know, I've moved away now, you know, and so. But, you know, I hope and pray everything's well. I mean, she was a thriving 1 year old whenever I did see her. So, and that was great. But I'll always remember that.
That is an excellent, excellent memory from such a, you know, a hard and stressful job, but a powerful one. Like that, it's you didn't ever know really the impact of you know, one's actions, but you know, you always hope that impact just continues to go on, you know, and pay it forward as well. Now, so you've had this time in the beginning. Now, did you end up moving into like a training position or a supervisor position before you ended up becoming a director as well?
I did. I actually, I was there about 5.5 years and they, so we had, you know, we didn't do the call taker dispatcher thing. We were all dispatchers, which we did it all. And then we had CTO, and then we had a shift supervisor, which we called senior dispatchers. And then there was the comm center manager. Well, so I moved up to CTO probably within about a year, year and a half of me being employed. And so I trained a lot of people and loved it. I loved training. 911 was my passion. You know, I wanted to be the one answering the telephone. I love the radio, but I'm a fast talker. Mm-hmm. So on the radio, it was harder for me to train on the radio because the new hire, the trainee, couldn't keep up with my talking. The officers and all, they were used to me. So, you know, they could understand just fine. We did have a few through the years that would record whatever I was saying and then play it back because they never could get, you know, me talking fast. But anyway, so I always requested, let me do the 911 training. And so anyway, I was a CTO, and then about 5.5 years in, a position came up for a senior dispatcher position. And so I applied for it and didn't really know that that I was what they were looking for because I was still young. I mean, you're talking, I was 23, give or take. I had people there that had been there, you know, 23 years, and that was a lot older than me, that were extremely qualified for the position. And so it was between, there was myself and three others that applied for it. And so whenever we went through the whole interview process and, you know, that kind of thing, I treated it just like I was one of them. I had been in this career for these years. You know, I was confident in my abilities. I knew, you know, what I had, wasn't really sure how I was going to manage older staff because, you know, being the young buck, as they call you, moving in, you know, it's hard to get the attention of the senior, you know, the seasoned folks that work there. So we went through the interview process, and whenever I went in and did my interview, we all did the interviews, and whenever I went back in there a couple of days later and they offered me the position, I asked them why they chose me, because all other than one, two of them had at least 2 years or more Trump on me. Mm-hmm. So one of the interviewees said, my main thing that told me to hire or to promote you to this position is one of your coworkers that interviewed for the same position said, I am not qualified for the job. You need to promote Holly. That person, her name's Stacy Johnson. She's still there now. She is a senior supervisor, you know, but that just, I mean, I went beside myself because not only was I qualified for the position, but the example that I was setting on the floor as a CTO, as a dispatcher, stood out to somebody that did have seniority over me. And, you know, and of course she wasn't the only person to interview, and we interviewed with a panel interview, you know, but, so I got promoted to senior, you know, dispatcher at that time. And it was a struggle. It was an uphill struggle because, you know, you still have the older crew that tried to give me a hard time, and, you know, you're too young to be in management and this, and, you know, and I just would kind of tell myself, you know, if not to them, because I didn't want to, you know, ruffle the waters, but I would say to myself, if you thought you were more qualified, then why in the world didn't you apply? You know, if I'm not the position, you know, the person for the job, then why didn't you do it? So anyway, I was a senior dispatcher up until my daughter was a junior in high school, which would have put it 2013. So from about for about 13 or 14 years, I guess, somewhere around there, give or take, I was a senior dispatcher, and the comm center manager position never came available. She was always there. So, but my daughter started her junior year in high school, and I was tired of shift work. You know, I needed to be at home with them. I wanted to enjoy. She was a cheerleader and really active in the school. So I wanted to be able to be at home with them, you know, during the night and that kind of stuff. Plus she's a teenage girl. She's driving. You need to be available all the time, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So I stayed in the police department, but I actually moved to a Monday through Friday position. And then from there, I applied for the director's position and got hired as the director. So,
wow.
In 2000 and I guess I became director in 2014 or 15. So it wasn't long that I was out off of the operations floor that I actually went to the director's position.
So before you had moved to that spot and you were going to, you know, be a supervisor or senior dispatcher, you say it was, you know, kind of an uphill battle and all, you know, because there's always the groups, you know, like you were saying, that say that you're, you know, you're too young or whichever to be in that spot. You know, how hard was that? But also, you know, you've got friends that, yeah, you know, you build these bonds with them and such, and you know, then you're kind of stuck in a spot where, you know, I remember when I became a supervisor as well, I told the people that I worked with, like, we're homeboys and homegirls, like, we're friends.
That's right.
I'm also your supervisor, so we're going to do this as a team, but, you know, there are going to be some times where I'm going to have to say, no, we're not going to do it like that. We're going to do it this way because of whichever. We're still going to have team discussion or you know, but it was separating that part of it. Was that difficult for you then?
I guess it was to a little bit, only whenever it became evaluation time. You know, evaluation time, they never liked me during evaluation time. And, you know, and I had one, and bless her heart, we're friends now. She actually worked for me whenever I was the director, because she was in a role that she did the addressing for our county. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that just plainly refused to sign an evaluation. And I explained to her, you don't have to agree to it. The signing of the evaluation just means that I've presented it to you, you know. And I let her know that, you know, this is strictly, you know, my opinion of your work performance. But they had a different level of respect for me, I believe, than some of the others. And I think one of the main things is because I always included them. I always did my part. You know, I was working the floor. I was training, you know, even as a supervisor. I mean, you know, if somebody had trouble with a trainee, I would let them sit with me for a couple of days, you know, even if they were assigned to somebody else, just to give that dispatcher a break. Because, yeah, you know, as well as I do, burnout happens so quick. And whenever you're training somebody, it's even quicker, you know. And so I would just take their training and I was, you know, let me loosen some of this load or lighten some of this load for you, and let me evaluate them. And that's the way I would approach it. So the trainee wouldn't feel like, oh, well, she just don't like me, or I'm not getting the job or whatever. And I'd say, no, I'm just evaluating you from a supervisor position, you know, this kind of thing. So it wasn't as obvious to, you know, to the trainee that you're killing my, you know, my CTO. But, you know, I think a lot of that is the supervisor remembering where they came from. Mm-hmm. I was that trainee. I was that trainer. You know, I understand being a single parent and not having anybody to watch your kids and you having to work shift work. I understood, you know, having to work holidays and work around holidays and Santa Claus coming on December 28th rather than December 24th, you know, coming the morning of the 25th, whatever. So, you know, I could relate to all that. And really just, you know, understanding that, yeah, I'm your supervisor and you're going to respect me in my role. But you know what? I put my pants on and my uniform and shirt on just like you do.
Right.
I'm no different than you. I'm no better than you. You know, if anything, I'm worse off than you are because I've got a lot more stress on me than you do. But let me help you as I can. So, you know, overall, I never had any real issues that we weren't able to work through with the staff that worked under me. And I mean, we had a good time, and a lot of them are still there. You know, some of them are gone and some of them have gone to be police officers. I know three of them are police officers with Dothan, and, you know, one's gone with the fire department. She's a fire, you know, with the fire department. And so, you know, I've seen people advance up, and I mean, it's great. It's really been a rewarding ride for sure.
How big was the area that you cover there?
City of Dothan has a population of about 85 residents, and then you know, daytime it's a little different, but we had about 140 officers at the time. We had nine city-owned fire stations that we dispatched for. Now, with the city of Dothan, we didn't dispatch for volunteers. They were in our county jurisdiction, which we had two different PSAPs. Mm-hmm. And then whenever I became the director, it was already in the makings for us to have a co-located facility, which is the one you visited. And so we had, you know, city dispatch on one side and county dispatch on another side, divided by a wall. That wall has nothing written on it but politics, you know, yeah, which is everywhere. So, but, you know, we didn't have to worry about the volunteers. Now, the county, on the other hand, they had, I think, six or seven municipalities they dispatched for, plus the sheriff's office, plus 17 volunteer fire departments. The city only had to worry about the city, and that's where I started my career.
Oh, okay. So then how many people did you have working on the floor at a time?
It really depended. Day shift was usually 5 to 7, and then night shift, we had a mandatory of 4. So we had a mandatory of 3 dispatchers and a supervisor. And so then it went down from there. But midnights was a mandatory 4, and then day shift and second shift was anywhere from 5 to 7, but all no less than 5. And then because we had, even though you could do every job at every station, we always made sure we had a police dispatcher, an info dispatcher, which is the one that did backup for PD and did all the NCIC and 29s, 28s, that kind of stuff. Then we had a fire dispatcher, and then what we called a other position, which was like animal control, after hour utilities, the catch-all kind of position. So, but that's how it was kind of set up.
Before I get to this next question, let me ask this first. What was your favorite position to work then? Now, I know you mentioned training, but for you specifically, you mentioned how you liked, radios, and then there was phones. But out of those, I mean, which one was your favorite?
If I did not have a trainee, then I wanted to be on PD primary.
Yeah.
Just because, it was just always fast paced. It was always movement. I mean, you look at people and you say downtime, what is that? We didn't have an idea of what downtime was, So as long as I wasn't training, I wanted to be on the radio. And there was times that I would sit there for 6 or 8 hours at a time, just because that's a position I like. In the event I had a trainee, then I wanted to be on the first 911 phone. So, it was kind of a mix between it too, but, that's just, yeah. If I was on the radio, then I was in my zone and you think about it, you build rapport with these units, you build relationships, their family, and I hate it. And everybody did a phenomenal job, don't get me wrong. But just like we are as parents, can't nobody mama as good as I can. So you think about it, and when you're on that radio, can't nobody take care of these officers better than I can, yeah. which isn't necessarily true, but that's the way I felt, so that's where I wanted to be if I was by myself.
See, I would switch between, phones and radios, especially when main law enforcement radio was just pumping, just going, and you're just doing your thing. You're just typing away, keying up with, using the pedal to key up instead of reaching to the side, you're using the pedal to key up and say stuff. And then if you've got a pursuit going, then everything is heightened 100%. You cut off all the traffic to go to a different channel, and you've just got that main traffic. Yep. And it's you and the officer and anybody else who's going over there to help. You're repeating, traffic that's being given so that other people can hear it as they're going to help that person. And man,
that's right. I had one like that actually. There was two 10-100s is what we called them. I don't know where they call them everywhere, but we use state 10 codes on our 10 codes, but vehicle pursuits that really stand out. And so I always lived in the county jurisdiction. So one of them was with an officer, and they were going in the back roads, and the city was chasing them. These city officers didn't have a clue of where they were going. So luckily I was on the radio because I was telling them, you're approaching this street and it's going to turn this, it's going to turn to the right, or a sharp curve to the left, or be careful, there's a bridge, because I was familiar with the area. Mm-hmm. So that was really a cool a vehicle pursuit. And honestly, if it wouldn't have been for me on that radio, we would have probably had several officers total out. And even the police chief wrote a letter of recommendation back once he listened to the call and listened to the tapes and knew what was going on and thanked me for being on the radio, And then another one, luckily technology has changed and radios pick up from, different county jurisdictions and that kind of stuff. But we had one, that was a stolen van that was going 231 South, like going towards Panama City, towards the beach way. And I mean, they were changing city jurisdictions and then went across state line, and we had lost radio communication at the time. So not only was I still on the radio with picking up everybody, We called the officer on his cell phone. So the lead officer, actually not the lead, but the second, because the way we did it, you had the first unit, you know, that was chasing, and then the second unit was the one calling everything. Mm-hmm. So I had him on the phone, and as he was telling me where they were approaching, then I'm dispatching these other responders, you know, because the state got involved, state troopers got, you know, everybody. And I'm with you on that heightened anxiety, you know, with a vehicle chase. It's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, you know, and I think one of the things that gets me sometimes, and I kind of flash back to it every so often when I'm watching Twister, the movie Twister.
Yeah.
And when they yell out, "We've got debris." And yeah. So the correlation here, how they fit together, is the fact that when I would be on main law enforcement radio and there would be a chase going on, and you know, the officer would say, I lost them. I'm continuing on. I lost them. I'll let you know here in a moment. And then, you know, sometimes they would come over the radio and say, "I've got debris here."
Right.
And it would turn out that whoever had taken off on that motorcycle or, you know, car or whichever, that was that person, you know. Wow. the vehicle, you know, the debris of the vehicle, whether it, like I said, whether it be motorcycle or car or truck, whichever, they would come up on that. And every so often when I watch that movie and I hear them say, "We've got debris," it takes me back to being there in dispatch and hearing officers say the same thing and thinking, man, I can't imagine what they're seeing right now. But then, of course, you know, they would call over either in a panic or, you know, the person would be okay. But either way, they would be calling for, you know, EMS and fire to get over there to help out, because now there was an accident that was going on from this leak.
Yep.
Now, so you've had this time, you know, and what made you want to go even further than and be the center manager? I mean, you have all this experience. There were so many different things that you were doing. You know, what pushed you further in continuing that piece?
So whenever I went to the daytime position, took me out of the center. It put me in a office environment in the police department. And I really enjoyed it, but it wasn't where I belonged. It wasn't where my heart was, you know. And so I knew that I had the ability to be the director. You know, a lot needed to be learned. And the former director, he was retiring out. And in our county, it was set up a little different. So we had what we called a 911 coordinator. So they didn't manage any staff or anything like that. They just managed the funds of 911 and the technology and that sort of thing. Well, he was retiring now, and I knew that there was a lot of new things that were on the horizon that had been planned for, and, you know, and budgeted for that were forthcoming. And that was a new CPE, a new CAD system, and a new facility. And I thought, what better time for me to get back in it is to apply for this position. Mm-hmm. So I did apply for it, and it, you know, it rocked back and forth between me and one other, and then I was selected. And so I got hired in, I guess it was March or April of 15, I believe. And then in October, we were breaking ground on a brand new facility. So not only were we breaking ground on the facility, that was in October. In October, we also went live with our new CPE equipment. And in November, we went live with our new CAD. So it was just, you know, busy. It was busy work. I was able to stay busy, and I was able to be involved and be a part of it. And I think, you know, some people doubted the decision that our board made with selecting me, because the other person that was running for it had an IT background. And so since we were going to the new building and to the new equipment, you know, they thought the IT background would help with the, you know, with all the moving parts. But what that person didn't have was no experience in a 911 center, other than just helping with the maintenance, or, you know, replacing a keyboard or replacing a mouse or troubleshooting a computer or whatever, but had never answered a 911 call. So, you know, to be honest, and not to be conceited, but because I had the experience, really, you need somebody that knows what's going on, that understands dispatch, you know? And so, you know, I went to the people, and even though coming in and leaving out, I still didn't manage the comm center. So the city police was managed and financed through the city of Dothan, and Houston County was managed through the sheriff's office. But we, you know, we paid for the facility. We paid for all of their equipment. We paid for all of their training, for most of their training, you know, and that kind of thing. So, I mean, everything went well, it went smooth, and the whole, you know, the whole CAD issue, we built from scratch. They didn't copy over any old data. I mean, we started, you know, with the basic MSAG and just, you know, reconfigured everything. The fire response plans, everything was redone, and we had a team from both the city and the county that built that up and, you know, and pulled it together. And so that's where I ended. So,
you know, it's awesome to hear this, because I'm in agreement that anyone who ends up coming in as the, you know, the center manager, director, whichever title for the person who's running the center, they definitely need to have that experience. You know, no offense to anyone who's gone into it that doesn't have any of that experience, but me personally, I feel like they need to have that to understand how to work with everyone that's in there. I mean, it's good to have that IT background as well, of course. However, there's so much more to that. I mean, if you think about it as well, even if you go back to call taking, you know, there are different things that happen in life to us that later on we end up taking a call that is similar to something that we've experienced, and we're able to handle that a lot better than, say, someone who has not experienced something like that, because they might not know how to speak to that person. Where, you know, if we experience something, we would be able to talk to the caller a little better and relate a little more, maybe make them feel a little more comfortable even during that call, because we've been there. So I feel like that's the same thing, you know, especially for you coming in, moving all the way up and becoming center manager and all, you had that experience. So when you're running it and you've got something going on with your dispatchers and call takers, you're going to know how to deal with it and also make them feel comfortable at the same time, versus someone who might not, and your people are just there like, oh, they don't know. They've not done the job that I do. So how are we going to relate?
Yep. And you know, you think about it, and even little minute basic things, for instance, you know, the biggest argument in a dispatch center, and I don't care where you're at, I don't care where you work in this nation, in the country, wherever you're at, the chairs are the biggest argument everybody has.
Yep.
Purchasing new chairs, you know, you've got your favorite chair, you sit in it. If you've never been a dispatcher, you cannot relate to what's a good chair and what's not a good chair. You know, so I think, you know, and I'm with you. No, you know, no negative to people who have never worked behind the console, but hats off to those who are in management positions or who are directors, which is what I was, you know, that knows and understands the, you know, the value of a 24-hour chair rather than a $24 chair. I mean, there's a big difference there. But, you know, I mean, and it's just simple stuff. It doesn't, you know, I get it. I mean, she was a lot smarter than I am as far as the technology stuff. And Kayla Branch can tell you, I'm having to learn a lot of that techie stuff and the IT side of it or whatever, but, you know, it's been good. I'm thankful for where I've started and where I've come. So
that's awesome. And also, you know, hats out to those who do come in that don't have that background, but who are willing to sit there and learn. There are some of those. I know some of those who have come in and they will go into the center. They will learn the, you know, the CAD program, the phone, all of it, so that they can, you know, be able to relate. But then, you know, there are others that are just like, I'm here. And I'm going to run it the way I run it. But
yeah, I know after I left Dothan, the comm center, they made the manager retired. They made that position a uniform officer position for the comm center manager for Dothan Police or Dothan Communications. Mm-hmm. And so they did hire brought in a lieutenant, and she was strictly assigned the comm center. And she did. I mean, she got out there. She learned everything about that center. She worked the position. She worked the radio. A little bit of a struggle on the radio because she was so used to being on the outside. So she had to, you know, mirror what she was saying and, you know, to say it back. Mm-hmm. You know, learn. She sat at a 911 console and she took 911 calls. But that doesn't happen everywhere, you know.
Yeah, right.
And even after she was moved, or the one, actually, I think she was the last one before they went back to civilian. But, you know, the other two or three that were lieutenants over that position, they didn't take that time. They, you know, they were just there just to be a manager, and that's what they did, which was fine. But it really helps not only the morale of the center, but the movement and, you know, and the progression of where that center's going as far as, you know, getting staff and maintaining staff. I mean, who are you to evaluate me if you don't even know what I do?
Yeah.
You know, come on. And right. So, you know, and her name's Rachel, and she was phenomenal in learning that position and learning that job as to where others aren't. Now they've gone back to a civilian position and did it. They promoted in-house. So actually a senior dispatcher who was a senior dispatcher, you know, has now promoted up into that comm center manager position. So it's good.
Excellent. Now you worked 25 in the center, but 26 altogether. And this last year, you made a jump from the center.
I went to the dark side.
Yeah. to becoming an industry partner within digital. Now, how has that change been for you? Because I will say right off the bat, when I made my change, I remember setting up my desk and I had my phone and I had my paper pad and a pen for notes, almost as if I was sitting down at the console, but there was no phone calls coming in. So I remember sitting there thinking, oh yeah, this is completely different. I'm doing other things now, but I had it set up. I had everything set up like I was getting ready to take phone calls.
Right. So this position actually came by a huge surprise to me. You know, we've talked earlier about building relationships and building, you know, family within the 911 world. And that's really what I've done. I mean, you know, through the years and being involved, that, you know, you have to get involved to get out there and know people and to network and things. So Caleb Branch, who's our Alabama market manager, was a former director at Blount County 911. And so whenever he saw that I had left Dothan, he, you know, reached out to me and said, hey, I'm looking for a teammate. This is what I need. You know, are you willing? Are you interested? You know, the first question was, do you miss 911? I was like, negative. Nope. I'm out. I don't want nothing to do with it. You know, I do miss the people. I miss the friendships and that kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm not sitting back at a console unless, you know, all you know what breaks loose and somebody just needs me. Yeah. And so anyway, so I jumped on board really blinded, not knowing, because I was like, okay, where's my job description? He's like, I'm writing it. I was like, okay, how am I going to apply for a job that I don't even know what I'm applying for? But I, you know, I come home and talk to my husband and I was like, this is what's going on. This is the, you know, and so I was extremely excited, jumped on board my first day, you know, and one of the things was Caleb said, well, you'll be traveling some, but not much, you know, it may be 1 or 2 days a week. You're going to be going to different PSAPs, you know, yada, yada, whatever. Okay. That's great. I started, no lie, Ricardo, on January 6th, January 7th and 8th, I was in Birmingham. So the very next day, the actual work day, the first 2 days I was on the road. So you know, and it's been an eye opener. You know, I tell everybody when I go in their centers, and a lot of them, I know a lot of Alabamians. That's what our governor calls us as Alabamians. But anyway, I know a lot of them in the other PSAPs and by first name, and they know me, they're familiar with me. And so, you know, and I tell them all the time, I was like, whenever I was sitting there, I didn't care how the call came in. I just needed that phone to ring so I can answer it and do my job. Now I'm having to learn, how is that phone ringing? You know, how are you getting that call? How is it going through Montgomery and Huntsville and getting back to you within a matter of milliseconds, you know? And so it has been a learning experience. You know, at the opening of your show, you mentioned about 2020 has been good. Well, 2020 has been good and bad for me. You know, it's been good because I've been blessed with a job that I love, that I can be at home, you know, and work from home and still, you know, be able to do what I need to do, pending my internet connection is good, you know, all is well. But on the flip side, as far as learning the technology and stuff, it's kind of had me bound because of, you know, the shutdown and COVID. So I haven't been able to travel and learn and educate myself as much as I would have liked to. But, you know, the light is at the end of the tunnel. I still have time to learn and, you know, we're moving forward. So it's exciting. It's exciting.
From what I've seen, you've been doing an excellent job. So well done. I feel lucky that I got that I went into in digital the way I did, because where you had what you said 2 days later you're already on the road. Yeah. I actually got about a week and a half to just kind of chill.
Right.
I had you know, all the time that I had in dispatch, and I remember my last day, actually the day after. So the first day after my last day there in dispatch was my first day at InDigital. And I remember asking Eric, who is, you know, the VP of the company, I remember asking him, or I called him and I said, so what do I do? You know, I'm half awake because my last shift was a 16-hour shift. I worked overtime on my last shift. I volunteered for it because somebody called in for the last 4 hours of the shift that they were going to take for me. I was working in 1P to 1A. And I just ended up volunteering because I was with my team and I was going to see it through the end with them. I didn't want anybody else to have to come in for it. So I stayed, and I don't even remember how much sleep I had. I didn't have maybe 3 hours or so. And I called him up and he goes, just take this time to, you know, to enjoy your family because you haven't had a chance to do that. But just know that as soon as you start, it's going to be crazy. And I thought he's probably just over exaggerating. Nope. 7 years went by like that.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's like this. I mean, you know, I did get to make a trip to Fort Wayne. So I did get to go up there after we rescheduled like three times, plane tickets and all, because of COVID shutting us down or whatever. So, you know, and it helped with me being in the profession and already knowing Mark Grady and knowing Eric and knowing, you know, Meredith and Brent and you guys and Vicky. And so I knew a lot of the InDigital team. So that was a pretty easy transition. But, you know, I can't beat myself up, but I'm one of those people. Don't tell me this is the way we do it. I want to know why we do it and how we do it.
Exactly. Yeah, you know? For sure. And I think that's what makes InDigital one of the great companies in public safety is the fact that they pull in those who have worked in the center or, you know, different parts of public safety to be able to kind of mold what it is that they want to put out there for those who are using it and benefiting from it. And, you know, it works for everyone in such a big way.
Yeah.
So that is excellent that, you know, they're able to do that. And as we go into the wrap up of this episode, this has been awesome to have you on and learn more about you and your story. What advice do you have for those who are, you know, maybe towards the end of their dispatching career, or, you know, supervisor, director, or whichever, that are looking into becoming an industry partner? Like, from your experience, You know, what is some advice that you might have for those who are thinking of becoming an industry partner as well?
Yeah. One thing I want to say is don't ever say never. Because I did. Mm-hmm. And I've learned that, you know, even though I enjoyed my years in dispatch, you know, I love, you know, being that intricate part to help save lives and that kind of thing. You know, as long as you're willing to move forward and learn something new, you know, we get to a certain age where we just kind of shut ourselves off. And we're like, no, I've learned it all. I don't need nothing else, you know, whatever. But, you know, the mind is a marvelous thing. And just to continue developing yourself. And, you know, I follow, you know, the women 911 thing and you within the trenches and stuff. And I see a lot of stories and people asking, you know, advice about burnout and, you know, that kind of thing. My biggest thing about burnout is just to set some time aside for yourself. And I get it when you're in smaller centers and you can't take vacation, you can't take leave or, you know, that kind of stuff. But sometimes those few extra moments in a restroom environment will refresh you like you wouldn't believe, you know, just kind of set yourself apart and just say, okay, God, help me through this shift. Let me, you know, let me do what I got to do to make it to the next day. But as far as moving up in, you know, in the career and developing or even moving outside the career, you know, I've had a couple of peers in 911 that's reached out to me about, you know, maybe going into the industry. You know, I've got one that was interested in going with one of them. I can't think who it was in here. But, you know, is not to give up. Just, you know, don't shut yourself down. Don't shut down the abilities that you have because, you know, we've talked about it and just, you know, keep moving forward. Just the sky's the limit. Just be open to change and the willingness to learn. So. But.
Thank you so much for being on once again and, you know, for sharing your story and continue doing what you do. This is awesome. Thank you so much for being on.
All right.
I will be right back here with you in just one moment. For those who are watching, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and that's going to be wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @91podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode, as a broadcast, has been sponsored by InDigital as well as Rapid Deploy, and this episode was an InDigital exclusive, so thank you so much. Thank you to the patrons for everything. If you're looking for any bonus content, you can check us out on patreon.com/WTT podcast. There is so much that is going on with that as well. And you can find us on Discord. And that is a community that I'm building right now that has focused conversations with a bunch of different channels and so many other good things. Might be able to even bring voice and such into Open Mic Live, where we can have people actually share the stories that they want to share through audio, as well as those in the comments. And if you're a patron, you can have access to the two secret channels that are on there for patrons only. So you can check that out as well. The community on Discord is called The Trenches. So thank you again to patrons and everyone for everything. I appreciate it more than you know. And this can be seen on Facebook as well as withinthetrenches.net. Let me bring that one off of there. That's a different one that popped up. That's an old one. You can check that out as well, because all the Dare to Be Great conferences are still available now and people are actually jumping on there. But check out Be the Difference as well through the Denise Amberlee Foundation. This can be seen on Facebook as well as YouTube and LinkedIn, and it can be heard 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everyone.